I think I was in love once. She was Brazilian or Chinese or something weird. Met her in the bathroom of a Kmart and we made out for hours. Then we parted ways, never to see each other again. Welcome in to the Bro 4 Squad podcast, where we're just a bunch of bros drinking beer and talking movies. This is episode 146, and I am your host, the Mayor Jeff Hornacek. Joining me, as always, with the movie discussion is our legal counsel, Ronnie Cycli. Ronnie, very special episode tonight. Before we get into it, is it illegal for me to gamble on our movie madness tournaments, or am I so bad at gambling in general that it really kind of just evens out?
Yeah, no, please gamble, because everyone else is richer for it.
Who gets the money if I gamble?
We all, society gets the money. The collective community benefits from you losing money.
Is that because, like, monetarily, or just watching me lose?
In spirit. Rachel is a big fan.
Why do you bring up my ex-wife all the time?
Because she pays me with her winnings, because she owes me from the divorce. It's fantastic. It's a win-win for me.
She cleaned up, I gotta say. And that divorce settlement. Good job taking all my money and assets.
You know, you gotta respect the game. Nothing personal. I mean, some of it was personal.
Yeah, I don't know. You said some fucked up stuff. It seemed like a direct attack. All right. Well, if you have not listened to our show before, here on the Bro 4 Squad podcast, we start every episode off with the most important thing in any bro's life, and that is chest day. And as this episode is dropped, it's actually Selection Sunday for the NCAA March Madness Tournament. But here on the Bro 4 Squad podcast, this year, it's Dejection Sunday is what we're calling it. Hashtag Dejection Sunday trademark patent.
Which you got from the divorce with Rachel, actually.
Yeah. That, I think you actually held up the proceedings so late on Saturday or it would be past midnight so we could call it.
The judge is like, this isn't normal to meet on Sunday, but I'll allow it. I want to see where you're going with this.
He's like, but you've already printed all the shirts, so I'm going to allow it. And here on the Bro 4 Squad podcast, for the fifth consecutive year for March Madness, we are doing a movie madness tournament. Now, previous years, actually the first year we did a bracket, which you can go back and listen to, of the 64 greatest comic book movies, which was arduous but very fun. Previous years we've done our favorite 3D animated movies, best Disney princesses, and we did a Star Wars movie tournament as well. But this year, Ronnie, very different. It is a battle of futility, where the worst movie will actually win in what we are calling our, quote, worst sequels we've ever seen movie madness tournament. So what we're doing here tonight, this is the selection show. So Cycli and I will randomly draw the 16 movies that we've chosen as a podcast to build our bracket. And you at home will vote on most of the matchups. So be sure to follow us on Twitter, at Bro4Squad, to make your voice heard. Now, Cycli, before we draw, it is important to note that, again, these are just the movies that we've actually seen for the most part. So there might be some really obscure sequel, but if not enough of us have watched it, it's not in the list.
Yeah, and also we didn't want to go with sequels that are, I'm sorry, but iconic, right? Like, you're not going to throw in Godfather 2 and Terminator in there. Or maybe we did. I don't know. We'll find out.
Yeah, because, like, there's no point. That'd be like us going to a middle school and competing against, like, fifth graders. And
yeah, because they would beat us.
They would destroy us. We've done it before. Another interesting thing to point out, we are also excluding any prequels or reboots, or like legacy sequels, I know some people call. And the last part, which we decided pretty early on we couldn't include this because it would have to be a 9,000 movie tournament, but we are not including anything that isn't a specific sequel. So like Friday the 13th, Part 8, Jason Takes Manhattan is not on the list because it is not the second installment or the direct sequel in the franchise.
So we're not getting Home Alone 4 in there?
See, I looked, that's the thing. A lot of lists included like Home Alone 3 and 4. I actually have kind of a soft spot for Home Alone 3, but on the list. But yeah, again, just too far down the line. Otherwise, it would be all Scary Movie sequels and like the Nightmare on Elm Street ones get really weird.
The door would be too open. You got to constrict it.
Yeah, we'd be talking about like two franchises of movies. Yes, offense to those. So, Cycli, this year's tournament is, again, a battle of futility. The worst movie is who you'll be voting for in each matchup at home. So, honestly, being the worst kind of sounds like a sport you and I would really excel at.
Yeah, Absolutely. It's something that you can say, you know what? I might be the worst, but I'm the worst, right? I'm not average. I'm not like all you other schmoes out there. I stand out.
It's like the South Park episode where all the teams are trying to throw the Little League game because they don't want to play baseball all summer. But that one team is like really good at losing.
It's like, yeah, you got to be the worse you are, the more impressive it is. I think you and I have had this argument. Sometimes it's equally or more impressive to be bad at something.
Yes. And with movies, sometimes you really just have to respect if a movie can be so shitty.
Yeah, because sometimes and we've talked about this on the podcast, we love bad movies. There are bad movies done well because they are hilarious. They understand, you know, we talk about Velocipasture, things like that, that we thoroughly are entertained by. It's hard to make a truly bad movie where you're like, nothing hits on all levels. Who was backing this?
Well, we're going to find out which is the worst truly bad movie as we begin to draw our 16 movie bracket. And again, this is totally random. If you're listening at home, I've put all the 16 movies we chose, written their names down on a piece of paper, folded them up, put them in a hat, and Cycly and I will unveil it today as Greg Gumbel and his cast of characters frequently do on the selection show on CBS. So, Cycly, our first two movies competing to be the worst sequels that any of us have ever seen are Zoolander 2.
Starting out strong.
And Thor: The Dark World. I saw both these movies in theaters.
You know, it's going to be an interesting matchup here because, one, we have just a massive fan base in terms of the whole world of Thor and Marvel. And then you have Zoolander, which people were begging for a sequel for decades.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not here to judge, but sometimes you wait so long, you think they have an idea after 20 years, and maybe they should have kept it in the bank, so.
I've only walked out of one movie in my life, and it was the same movie you walked out of, which, I don't know, have we revealed it on the pod, or are we saving it for, like, a...
I feel like we might have, but... I don't know if anyone's ever seen this.
The Black Dahlia, which is obscure. Yeah. But I saw the movie by myself, but I was very close to watching
it. Are you sure we didn't watch it together? Or have we blacked this moment out from our life that we'll never
remember? I think we did. Sorry, I was talking about Zoolander 2. I
saw sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, and I almost walked out of it. And Thor: The Dark World, I think, is shit on so much because it is... Most lists have it as the worst Marvel movie or the second worst. And it really, there is just, it's compared to everything else that it's a part of in continuity. So
the big question for me is on this matchup, particularly, is a fan base of an overall massive genre enough to save this movie versus an iconic standalone movie comedy where people don't owe allegiance to the character because of one good movie. So I'm interested to see how people come out on this one.
Yeah. Zoolander 2 was so bad, I started questioning, did I actually like the first one? That's how you know a sequel's horrible.
Like, you know, and these movies, and I have a feeling we're going to see another similar type movie. I'm not going to say it because I know it's going to come up. The saddest part is how much these characters, these actors have aged, and the comedy does not just come off the same way, and it's kind of sad.
That's the interesting thing about this tournament is there are a lot of comedies in it. How will they fare against the movies that just actually suck? Moving on to our second matchup, which I just drew, speaking of a big fall from its predecessor, in the second matchup we have Independence Day Resurgence, which I watched on an airplane and was still somehow bored, going up against Deuce Bigalow European Gigolo.
This is a tough one.
This is tough. This is like two heavyweights in terms of suck.
Badly. This is going to get the viewers. This is going to be primetime CBS.
I'll say this. If either of these were on opposite sides of the bracket, this might have been my championship prediction.
I'm trying to give out as little personal opinion as I can. I don't want to influence it. But I wanted to like Independence Day 2 so bad. I was excited about it. And then I think when we were like, 6 months out, we found out what they did to Will Smith's character.
Yeah.
When they did the teaser interview release with him. And then there's a question of you want to like that movie. And is on the other end of the bracket, Deuce Bigalow, male gigolo, are you sitting there anticipating that being a good movie? Because if so, I do want to talk to you. You know, did you go in expecting great things? Sorry, go ahead.
It's like a few people saw Deuce Bigelow, and Rob Schneider is like, oh, so you guys want another one? And we're like, well, no, please just relax, sir.
Seven people saw it, man. Come on.
One of the big debates we'll have, because I think we're going to use three of the Broforce Squad criteria as opposed to the five. We're going to whittle it down for these matchups, will be the cast and the acting, because I think you need to lose huge points when you still go ahead with a sequel, but you don't return large portions of your cast. And Independence Day Resurgence, again, you wait 15-ish, more than that, probably 20 years almost, to do the sequel, and you don't even have your lead actor coming back. Like, why did we decide to still do this after almost two decades if we don't have...
And then you can ask this question because it's an interesting debate. In Zoolander and what, you know, and let's take Anchorman in there, you do get the originals back and then you're almost in more pain. So, right. You know, it is an interesting line that meets when you have the original characters and none at all, because it's like what people are wanting out of these Disney remakes with the live action. They do the exact same movie, people are pissed.
Yeah,
they changed it enough, people are pissed, and I'm in those camps. I'm always pissed about the Disney remake. So, you know what I mean? Like, it's interesting to say. I think Independence Day was the typical Hollywood. They were just like, we got to get this. People are gonna pay to go.
And anyone who was in the theater for European Gigolo was probably like, what have we done?
If it wasn't full of 13-year-old sixth graders, then I'll be shocked.
Yeah. All right, on to our third matchup. A battle of two comedies here. We have Anchorman 2, The Legend Continues, going up against Caddyshack 2, which I have not seen in quite some time, but people do say it might be one of the worst comedy movies ever put together.
Which, again, that sounds like a compliment to me, because that's not easy. Because as we're seeing in this list, there's a lot.
I think there's a robot golfer in Caddyshack 2, if I remember right.
I can honestly tell you, I've seen it. It's not coming out in my head because it's not memorable at all. That might be a compliment.
Anchorman 2 brought the whole gang of guys back. And I remember thinking, how do you get this cast? And I'm not laughing.
So I can't claim I walked out of this movie. But I can claim, because I did not see it in theaters, that I stopped it after 20 minutes.
Wow. When he goes blind and he's... The actual scene?
That's the scene I stopped. That's the scene I stopped.
Yeah, I wish I would have done the same thing.
So, you know, and the thing about Caddyshack, like I said, is, you know, you have an iconic comedy. But is the fact that it doesn't stand out to me about how bad it was? Was it either I was so young I didn't understand how bad it was, or it wasn't as bad and obviously I don't remember it? Because the worse the movie is, I feel like I'll remember it, right?
Yeah, and that's almost the thing, too. Like, if you're so bad that you're not even like memorable bad, you're just like, I've tried to repress you, my brain has, that's worse.
Yeah, there's a spectrum, right? The middle, the average movies we don't remember, and if you go all the way to the positive, you remember. If you go all the way to the negative, you remember.
All right, our fourth matchup, this is another, these are all shit shows, but this one I'm just like, if you made me try to rewatch both of these, just like your Anchorman 2 litmus test, I don't know if I'd get 20 minutes in. I know the first one I wouldn't even get 5 minutes in. That is Mortal Kombat Annihilation. And is going up against the Bruce Almighty sequel that returns Steve Carell in Evan Almighty. And I remember thinking when Evan Almighty came out, it was probably like the middle of The Office. I was like, I don't think Steve Carell's going to have a movie career. That's how bad Evan Almighty was.
I will say, I believe I watched Evan Almighty on an airplane. And I think mentioned this earlier, I think watching movies on airplanes is an interesting thing, because you could be so bored, you actually find movies more entertaining. Mm-hmm. Or you could be so desperate for a distraction that you will hate movies more than they deserve to be. Evan Almighty was the first one for me. I knew it was nothing like the first one. Bruce Almighty was a great comedy. But I remember not thinking I hated it that much. And then I think maybe 6 months later, or a year later, I watched it on Netflix or something like that. And was like, was this the same movie I saw?
Yeah.
Now, Mortal Kombat Annihilation. I mean,
I've tried to watch it three times. I've never gotten more than 15 minutes in.
I mean, the first one you could have a lot of arguments about. There's a lot of, like, just as a kid, you love playing the game, how we felt about it. But there's some, we talk about movie, you know, video game movies in general. We've mentioned this on the podcast before. There's a reason you can't claim there's one that's the best, because I don't think there is one.
They recast, like, everybody. It doesn't even make sense. Like, who are these actors in the first Mortal Kombat you can't get to come back for Mortal Kombat Annihilation?
You that embarrassed?
Right. All right, our, what is this? The fifth matchup we have is Speed 2 Cruise Control going up against Son of the Mask, starring Jamie Kennedy doing a Jim Carrey impression for 90 minutes.
Well, first of all, I just love the Speed 2 Cruise Control.
I mean, title. Great fucking title, yeah.
And
it sounds like that, a made-up title.
And Keanu Reeves is not in that, correct?
No, he did. He did not come back.
Who do we get? It's Sandra Willem Bullock. Dafoe.
I know Jason Patrick is in it, I believe. But I maybe like Willem Dafoe is the villain. He might be the villain.
Yeah, I believe we got him out of it. And you said Sandra Bullock was not in it.
No, she did come back.
She did come back. Yeah, so she clearly had the paycheck went to her and not them. But yeah, no, I don't. This is a tough one. This is a good matchup.
Son of the Mask is just straight up unwatchable.
Is it? It's, and I don't blame Jamie Kennedy for it though.
No, dude needs to take every paycheck he can get.
And look, I will say this: like late '90s, Jamie Kennedy, I think he had talent. I thought he was pretty funny. I think when I watch other movies that he was in or other characters he played, I always am entertained by him. I think where he struggled was becoming the main character.
Yeah, I still think Malibu's Most Wanted has some moments.
Good.
I don't think it's not a movie that would be able to be made now.
No, but oh god, that was a funny movie. It's very underrated.
Yeah.
Speed 2, I'm like, again, it just goes back into that thing like, just because you had a good idea for the first one doesn't mean you can keep doing it.
I'm going to have to rewatch Speed 2 before this, but the idea of taking them on the water but kind of doing the same thing is just hilarious to me.
Yeah.
People will love it. All right, our next matchup is Dumb and Dumber 2, but Psycho, it's funny because it's spelled T-O.
Oh, grammar.
Grammatically correct, yeah. Versus the Santa Claus 2. Now, just to clarify, Dumb and Dumber 2, for those at home, is not the prequel, which actually came out before this, which is When Harry Met Lloyd. This is the one that returned Jim Carrey and Jeff Daniels and proved that the Farrelly brothers, were just one-hit wonders, really, comedically. I think.
Until they did the Green Book.
Yeah, which is...
Well, one of them.
Where did that come from?
Yeah. It's like not your... What was your second movie again? I'm sorry.
It was Santa Claus 2, which we've talked about this before. It is amazing how good the first Santa Claus is and how fucking bad the other two are. The third one is one of the worst films I've ever seen. The second one is pretty bad as well.
I always think that. Like, I almost is shocking when you have such a good first movie to come back and just mail it. I think that was probably part of it. They're like, cool, we're going to profit off this and we don't have to try.
Yeah.
And then we get Dumb and Dumber 2, which, again, I think you and I have talked about. Dumb and Dumber, the original 94, is maybe top three in my comedies, if not number one. It's one of my favorite films. Every scene is so funny.
I know.
There's so many layers to Dumb and Dumber. And it, same thing we said about Anchorman. Same thing we said about Zoolander. They wait 20 years, 25 years, or whatever it was. And you're like, okay, that means you have this idea. You've had all this time to think about. You got Jim Carrey. You got Jeff Daniels back.
Yeah, especially when those actors aren't struggling, right?
No, it's not
like
no.
They're not like pining at the directors like, hey, man, give me some work. Let's do this.
That's honestly, I can tell you why I was excited for Dumb and Dumber 2. Because, I mean, Jeff Daniels is actually a serious actor. That's what's so amazing about him doing Dumb and Dumber. He was never really a comedic guy. And I wanted to like it so bad. I wanted to like it so bad. I was so excited.
I've never remembered feeling this, but I remember you and I being like actively scared to go watch it.
Yes. Yeah. Because I didn't want it to hurt. Because like you mentioned this, Zoolander 2 hurt Zoolander to you.
100%.
And I was scared of Dumb and Dumber 2 doing that for Dumb and Dumber. The good news for me is I don't remember shit about Dumb and Dumber 2, so Dumb and Dumber still just exists as a great, perfect comedy in my mind.
Yeah, I think I got to like this scene where they go meet Rita Felcher from Cranston, and I was like, you know what? I'd rather this just exist in my head, almost like the Kessel Run with Han Solo. It's better in my head than it is seeing it play out in real life.
Absolutely.
All right, our last two matchups. First, we start with what I think is one of the most interesting matchups in this, because genre-wise, they're not that far off. And it's I Still Know What You Did Last Summer, obviously the follow-up to I Know What You Did Last Summer, versus Transformers Revenge of the Fallen.
Remind me, that's not the one where we get the Transformer testicles, right? That's the third one?
You know, I think it is this one, actually.
Okay. Well, there you go. Then
and
I
this
have
is the one
on
where
list.
Michael Bay does the really hilarious racist caricatures with some of the Transformers.
Oh, Michael
Bay. Very funny. This was the one where, this is Megan Fox's last movie, and supposedly on set, her and Michael Bay were getting into, like, shouting matches with each other.
Yeah.
And Shia LaBeouf, this was, like, the beginning of him going crazy.
I've read a lot of things about, obviously, the way she was treated on set. Mm-hmm. Pretty sad if you actually read about it.
Right.
And the Transformers in general, and I remember that's why I kind of was like hurt by the second and third one. They're supposed to be just dumb, fun movies. You know, the first one is fantastic.
It
literally.
Is.
And I think I just remember it going off the Michael Bay deep end. Right. Like, he just Michael Bayed himself.
Crane shot. It's like, dude, relax.
Absolutely ridiculous.
And this one, I remember, this is where they end up in the Mojave Desert.
Yes. Okay, so it is the testicle one. Yeah, that's
it. He didn't have a way to get them there, so they basically just transport from the Museum of Flight. Like, literally, something happens and it warps them there. And this is where Shia LaBeouf, remember, he broke his hand on set? So when they transport, his character like falls from 10 feet and he breaks his hand. So he has a cast on the rest of the film.
That's like nice continuity there, buddy.
Because I think
it's not like when... Go ahead, sorry.
Well, he got like drunk at a bar and like punched a wall or something.
That sounds like Shia. It's not like when Leo broke his hand during Django Unchained. It's like this epic thing. He like keeps going. No, Shia LaBeouf is just an idiot.
Michael Bay is like, this is my Tarantino moment, even though obviously it happened before. He's like, I can fucking work with this. I'm an auteur.
Yeah.
He probably thinks he is. All right, the last matchup we have features The Amazing Spider-Man 2, which is the Andrew Garfield one where Jamie Foxx gives, to me, the most mailed-in performance I've seen aside from Zooey Deschanel in The Happening, where he gives it as Electro. Versus The Hangover Part 2, where has one quote that I love, which I'll say for if we ever get into this. But overall, I mean, it's a paint-by-numbers version of the first one, not set in Las Vegas.
But it's in Thailand. That's why it's funny.
Because Bangkok is a funny
one.
Do you get it?
Because it's like, oh, cock. I get it. Yeah. And banging the cock.
Right. Sex thing.
I can tell you. Again, like, I think this is a common theme among these, and which makes this a difficult, it's going to be a difficult choice, because you can look at these movies as just terrible, bad movies. But Hangover 2 did exactly what the problem is, as we talked about. And then they do Hangover 3, which obviously is not being included, and then they change it up and people are mad about that. And so it's just one of those things that there's no right answer here, and maybe Hollywood should just learn to let a classic be a classic.
Yeah. It's weird that people hated Hangover 3 for the... I actually think Hangover 3 is okay. Like, it's not that bad.
Because I agree with that. I think it's better than 2.
But people... Yeah, the second one is, like, way too identical to the first one, except it's not funny.
Well, it gets... And it gets so ridiculous. I mean, like, in a... The Hangover original was... Yes, it was ridiculous, and there were elements of realism to it. Hangover 2 just got, like... Ha ha, they're going to be doing the stupidest shit we can. And it takes you out of it a little bit.
Yeah.
I will say this, Tobey Maguire is lucky. I know it's a different genre of the Spider-Man, but he's lucky we're not including the third movies in there. Because Spider-Man 3 of the Tobey Maguire trilogy, I would love that to be on this list, because him being the emo guy in that one, I just want to throw that out there. He's just be thankful that we're not including that.
Yeah, and if we had to go just acting cast performances, Topher Grace would get fucking spit roasted on this podcast as Eddie Brock.
God.
Yeah, we'll have to do like third incarnations of movies at some point.
that'll be interesting.
That'll get really
even
hard.
Tougher than this.
All right, so if you're looking for the bracket, I'm sure you weren't writing it down at home as we were talking. I will link it in the description to the Worst Movie Sequels Movie Madness Tournament for this year. And again, follow us on Twitter at Bro4Squad. We're going to post the majority of these matchups for you as fans to decide which movie is worse. Remember, we're not voting for the better movie. Which one sucks more? So it's sort of counterintuitive, but I think when you see the two films against each other, you'll get it. Like, obviously, we don't want to know which of these is better. They're all awful. And if you absolutely love one of these movies, comment below or tweet at us. I would absolutely love. I promise it will not get into some divisive argument.
Yeah, defend it.
Please.
And the thing is, we encourage you, we defend horrible things all the time. Horrible movies, absolutely. Horrible shows all the time. We love that.
Brian especially. We can say it because he's not here to defend himself. Look at our last episode. He defended Abe Lincoln Vampire Hunter, unironically.
Can you say with any honesty that there of the 16 movies you just said, there is one or two or a couple you have as a guilty pleasure enjoy?
That's a really good question. Looking through this list... Maybe The Amazing Spider-Man 2, actually, as we're talking about it, just because it is so bad and tries to... It's so ambitious because it thinks it's going to set up all... spawn all these spin-off movies, a Sinister Six film, Venom, Kraven the Hunter, like all these things, and none of it comes to fruition. In fact, so little so that Sony licensed Spider-Man back to Marvel after that came out.
Like, you have this.
So maybe that one a little bit. Some of these, though, are just like, they hurt me so much because, like you said, mm-hmm. I love the original one so much. Like, Zoolander, Independence Day, Anchorman.
And Dumb and Dumber.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Dumb and Dumber especially. That's the one I still don't think I've seen all the way through because I'm still too frightened.
No, you made the right choice. Like I said, it didn't hurt my opinion of Dumb and Dumber, but there's no reason for it. I will say, like, I know this sounds stupid, we didn't talk that much about it, but... And again, maybe it's our love for horror, and especially bad horror. But I still know what you did last summer. Like, it's bad, but it just gives me what I was expecting.
Yeah, and I will say this: like, there are ridiculous elements, like Jack Black in the movie, like playing the stoner guy at the resort. Yeah. But some of it is kind of cool. I will admit, it's just losing like half the cast.
you're never gonna do it.
Throw Brandy in there and we'll move ahead with it.
And I'm not saying, I'm not trying to influence. I'm not saying I like that movie. I'm just saying this list is pretty intense. I actually say this is the better one.
This will be interesting, though. Like, looking at this, man, I don't know. The worst movie on here, if you come out of this list on top, which is technically on bottom, you suck. And congratulations to you.
I think there's a lot of... in the 4 or 5 years we've been doing this, there's always clear favorites, at least two or three. Mm-hmm. I cannot tell you what the top half even would be.
No. There's seven or eight movies that if you told me right now they were the champion, which is, again, the loser, mm-hmm. I would say I'm not surprised.
Yeah, absolutely. This is going to be fun.
Yeah, we love when the NCAA tournament's wide open, right? Like five or six teams can win it. Here, like you said, we got half the field that's got a shot at this thing. Santa Claus 2, don't think you're... I know we're ways from the holiday season, so you might think you're just going to get a fucking free pass. It's not going to happen. The Escape Clause, very clever title. Fuck off. All right, that brings us to the second part of our show, which is our protein shake, where we go around and talk about what's in our cup, also known as what have we watched lately. And Cycly, mine is light this week. I only have three things, and one is The Bachelor, which I normally talk about with Banner, so I'll hardly say anything about that. What have you seen lately? Since we last spoke.
Yeah, not too much. Since the last episode, I can say, I mean, mainly I blame you. You came and visited, so I didn't get to watch TV as much. So appreciate that.
I stood in front of the TV. I was
very frustrating. The wife and I watched Ma, on last Friday, and yeah, I talked to you a little bit about it. Octavia Spencer is an actress I respect, and so, you know, I was intrigued. It kept popping up on HBO. And so you're like, hey, I'm always in the mood for a thriller. I'm always in the mood for a semi-horror. And we watched it, and I didn't know anything about it going in. Didn't really watch a trailer. I had heard some things about it. And what I'll say is it's one of those movies that has a decent, a semi-decent idea. Something that, like, you can make a plot around and make it grow a little bit. And then all of a sudden, you know the runtime when you select the movie, and you check your phone every so often, and you say, where is this going? And all of a sudden, at one point, I looked over at my wife and said, there's 10 minutes left in this movie. What the fuck are they doing?
Yeah, I don't even know.
They're out of, they haven't even made the decision to go anywhere. And the last 10 minutes gets super ridiculous. And the acting is fine in the movie. The writing was fine. It just was one of those things that they either didn't take time to develop actually a good ending, or something that they just were like, eh, we got the famous actress in it. We have a thriller. We have a teenagers drinking and partying. It's going to make the money.
So do you think it was more a pacing issue, or in the editing room, the studio was like, dude, this has to be under an hour 40. Like, you got to figure out how to do the last 20 minutes.
I'm pretty sure it was PG-13. I think I could be wrong about that. And I think it was one of those things that, like, this is going to be for teenagers. And this is going to be, oh, and so yeah, they're going to make it for teenagers.
It is crazy. I a lot of times hear people, and I used to be one of these people too. I'm like, why don't you just fucking make it R, man? And yes, then if you look absolutely at the dollars and cents, though, I think it is a huge difference.
And I could be wrong about that. There is some gore at the end. So now I'm questioning myself. And you know how bad I am at assessing.
You're very desensitized to gore.
I'm so desensitized to these.
3 minutes it's in, fine. You're chopped off.
But, you know, like I said, like, I wanted to like it. I thought, and there's a couple good actors in it. A lot of up and coming. Deanna Silvers, she's a young actress who's has been in a number of things lately, and she was great in it. And that's why it's hard to, like, break down the movie in terms of what made it bad. Outside of, they just really didn't decide to end it properly. And it was never going to be, like, a great movie. It was just something that was entertaining as a thriller.
A Blumhouse movie, I believe. Yeah. Which, and, you know, we've talked a little bit, and I actually respect what they do. Their methodology, or kind of their business model, is take a bunch of horror concepts that can be produced at a low budget, put your best effort into them, get promising directors, and if you only hit on like 2 out of 6 or 7 a year, you're still in the black, because again, the distribution is probably, they probably spend more money distributing than they do on actually making the movie.
I think that is Hollywood just in general with the horror thriller genre. People like us will go see these movies just purely because of that. And then, you know, and then you see your, you know, 1 out of 5 is great. And you're like, yeah, this is why I come to these movies, because eventually one is going to hit. But I did buy her as a villain. I think she did a good job. There was a lot of cringy moments, but I think that's more on the topic of an adult hanging out with teenagers to be. You think it does trying to kind be of cool. Make
your skin crawl, which is sort of like this inherent horror that we don't typically. So that, I don't know, that, yeah, I remember that part of the trailer kind of skeeved me out. And the trailer too, I thought, was really good for like the first minute and a half, and then they just showed way too much, what I'm assuming is the third act.
That's what I'm saying, there's not really a surprise at the end. You kind of have a feeling where it's going.
Yeah. All right, one thing I watched, I'll just talk about this really briefly because Brian's not here, was The Bachelor. And as we're on this, Season 25, episode 10 was the most recent episode, which is, for Bachelor fans, the fantasy suite. If you're not a Bachelor fan, let me just explain this in layman's terms. The Bachelor or Bachelorette takes the final three people, and they each get a one-on-one date with them. In this case, Matt James is the Bachelor. So he takes through the final three women, and they decide at the end of the date, are we going up to my room to get it on? Sexual intercourse. And cycling,
but they're not married. Just it's shocking.
It's almost as bad as the Shakira Jennifer Lopez Super Bowl halftime show, which, according to some women online, was pornography.
But they should watch real pornography.
That's what a lot of people were tweeting at this one. They're like, if you want to see real porn, I'll send you links. I can access that for
you. I have sources.
Please don't, sir. This is a Wendy's. But the fantasy suite, we talk about this a lot. Usually the methodology is the guy takes the two girls he's most serious about and then one chick that he's just been really wanting to hook up with, like, the whole show. And I think Matt kind of did that again. He went 3 for 3. Let's just say all three girls wanted to go up to the fantasy suite with him, which is usually if they're serious about the relationship, they often do that unless there's, like, we've had women that, and men too, that were for religious reasons didn't do it, which is totally fine. And usually, obviously, you know that going in, so it's not like a shock to the person. But as far as the Bachelor and Bachelorette shows go, this was a really boring episode. Even the rose ceremony, they try to create drama, doesn't really happen. And then what they do with Always is tease the next episode. Oh, but this one's going to be the dramatic one. And it's the finale, and I'll just say I'm not digging the season, even as like my trashy reality TV show, which I usually always have in my back pocket. So I'm ready for it to end. It's kind of been, it's been a grind. It's work for me, you know?
See, that's what guilty pleasure trash TV should be. As someone who's not watching it, but I do enjoy my trash TV occasionally.
I think it's good for us after we work our jobs from 9 to 5, a lot of times more hours, to come home and watch something mindless where we see people make bad decisions to make us feel better about ourselves.
Yeah. Those idiots. I'd never do that.
Right. It's so unhealthy that it's healthy in a lot of ways. All right. What else is in your cup, Cycling?
So we've come full circle. I don't need to talk much about it because it doesn't need to be talked about. When the pandemic started a year ago, the first show I binge watched was Seinfeld. I have now, a year later, restarted binge watching Seinfeld.
Wow.
And again, as you have listened, we did our Seinfeld How I Met Your Mother comparison a couple episodes ago. We did talk about rewatching How I Met Your Mother for the first time in 7 years earlier. And so it was a perfect time to readdress Seinfeld. And it's kind of weird to think back that it's been a full year of sitting on the couch.
That is crazy.
And so, of course, like, you know, what I can say about Seinfeld is the difference between watching other sitcoms is every episode you watch is an iconic episode. I will sit there and be like, oh my God, this was this season. The Waiting Room Chinese restaurant episode was the second season. Oh my gosh, this, you know,
like, wasn't just it really?
Yeah, it's, and wow. Then you think about what was in the 9th season. Some of those were still classics. And so, you know, I was like talking with my friends yesterday at curling and was like, oh my gosh, this episode of Seinfeld. And the contest, I think, is season 3 or 4. Like, I mean, it's just like crazy to me to watch a show that hit every single time. And, you know, so I could just say, again, I've said this 1,000 times, watch Seinfeld if you never have, even if you weren't from that generation, from that era.
Yeah.
It's worth watching because there's not a show like it.
On TV the other day was the episode where George is dating the lip reader. Jerry is, and George is using her at the party.
You just can't get over how bad George is.
Well, I don't want to sleep alone.
Oh, it's so good.
That show is great. All right, one thing that I watched, which I thought I had seen this movie, just because I love the type of humor, and I love so many of the stars in it, but I don't think I had when I rewatched it, and that's Best in Show, which is the mockumentary starring mm-hmm. Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hara, of course, from Schitt's Creek. Lots of other familiar faces. Fred Willard is hilarious in it. And it's about the world of competitive dog shows.
It's so good.
One specific show in Pennsylvania. I can't remember the name of the city. And again, it's told through the perspective of these four dog owners bringing their animals to the show. And obviously, to say they're eccentric would be probably the understatement of the year. And you and I have talked about our appreciation, I won't say love because it is very polarizing, but our appreciation for dry humor. And I think you could watch Best in Show and actually have no idea that it's a comedy, or you could watch Best in Show and be cracking up like every 2 or 3 minutes.
You can watch Best in Show and not realize it's not a real documentary.
Yeah, exactly, because that world is so crazy.
And so if you think that, you're like, yeah, it's the same way we've talked about British humor in general, like Monty Python, things like that. Like, you know what? Some people are going to hate that. Like, I love all of those Eugene Levy movies. The Spinal Tap, mm-hmm. Waiting for Guffman is one of my favorites. Obviously, Best in Show. But yeah, like, it's one of those things that, like, I think I used to, like, judge people on. Like, oh, you don't like Monty Python? Oh, you don't like this? And then you just get older and you just realize people have different tastes, and that's okay. And yeah. I can understand why it's not for everyone, but I love those movies.
Yeah, and this one, I don't know the percentage, but it felt heavily improvised, which I always like. I feel bad for whoever's editing it, because, like, how do you pick and choose what the best takes are? There's no script that you have to adhere to, especially with these actors. I mean, the editing room must have been just a brutal chore to find their best takes, but... it like there's just scenes that are just so ridiculous. You're like, there's no way this was written.
I think you're right. I'm not saying this with anything in front of me, but I believe Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hara are notorious improvisers. Mm-hmm. And they just do scenes with a kind of the same Larry David Curb Your Enthusiasm. Like, here's what's going to happen in this scene. Here's where you need to get from A to B, but we're not going to tell you what to say, but just get there.
Right. And we need to end here. Whatever the path there is,
yeah,
it's up to you. It is interesting. Last thing I'll say about it. By the way, this is on HBO Max. I think each of the past few weeks I've touted some. Their library of old movies is so incredibly deep. It's really impressive. It is kind of crazy because I told my fiance, she was like, would I like Schitt's Creek? This was probably a few months ago before she started. And I was thinking that it was probably in the vein of this type of humor. Just knowing who was behind it. And I said, I haven't seen Schitt's Creek, but if it's like this, I don't think you'll like it. Mm-hmm. She loved Schitt's Creek, and it's, I don't want to say very different from Best in Show, but in terms of a comedic sensibility, it's much more modernized, obviously, but it does not feel like it came from the same minds at all.
I will say that they're both dry humor, but one is so, like, Schitt's Creek is funnier the more you know the characters, the longer you stay with them. Whereas Best in Show is something that is hilarious on the sense of, like, there are people really like this.
Oh yeah.
Like, that's what's so wild. Like, it's not funny, like, slapstick, ha ha funny, here's a in your face joke. The joke is these are real people and they exist, whether this is a mockumentary or not. So I think that's what, you know, they are they're both dry comedies, but they are different dry comedies.
And Best in Show just plays in a world that, like, I'm assuming, like, no one listening to this podcast has ever been in. And I don't feel like you said, like, it's disingenuous to that world, which is, again, where the humor is derived. I'm like, yeah, these are people, like, if I went to a dog show, I'd probably run into 5 or 6 of these guys. Yeah.
And you read articles, you can read articles about that saying, like, no, this is real realistic. This is the reason why people think it's a documentary.
The couple who says their dog is just so negative. Oh, she's so negative. Like, she hasn't said a word her whole life. What are you talking about?
As a dog person, it's true. People say that shit.
And the couple is yelling at each other. She's freaking out. Like, I feel like you're the ones. Last thing I watched, we actually... watched or will have watched together by the time this comes out, but it's Saw 5. So obviously you and I are doing a movie commentary on this in preparation of Spiral, sort of the legacy sequel / soft reboot of the Saw franchise. Now, anything you want to tease for our movie commentary on this, which is going to be dropping before Spiral comes out here in May?
Go against your instincts.
Very good.
Yeah. I like Saw 5. Saw 5 is one of my, when we walked out of the theaters, I think you and I saw every Saw together, was one of my least favorites. And then I think that Saw 3 and 6 didn't feel that great to me. And then as I've rewatched them, really redeemed themselves.
When when I rewatched it, I remember thinking, this is like a sort of a turning point in the franchise, because they start to give a lot of backstory and nice fan service to the people that have been there the whole way. But also, this is probably the last movie where the traps aren't so ridiculous that it's like the only way they market the movie, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. Like, and you're not saying, yeah.
I think it's Saw Legacy. It's the one where, like, I'm like, okay, now we've really jumped the shark here.
Yeah, you're going to do 3D and get ridiculous. I think Saw 5 is, I think I mentioned this to you, and I'm sure we'll talk about it when we do the, movie commentary. But there are 5 essential traps in the main trap story, and they're relatively quick moving. Mm-hmm. And so we don't actually get that much time with the main trap characters. And there is a larger focus on the backstory. And I think that's probably why initially I didn't like that one as much. But when you look back on it and you see the overall arc and what the meaning behind it was, it has so much more substance than I probably saw 4 and definitely saw 7.
Yeah, it really is kind of like 2 movies. It's like a police procedural.
Yeah.
Investigative movie, and then it's like the traditional Saw film that you know, but it still encompasses a lot of the mm-hmm. twists and turns and some cool
Julie Binks.
She's awesome.
Who I only knew from Dexter.
Yeah, she's great. And I love Scott Patterson, who plays Strom as well. I wish he was in more stuff. All right, that's all I got. You seen anything else?
I saw the first 5 minutes, if that, of Tom and Jerry, which I think is going to be a good segue into our next segment, because there's a reason I stopped after 5 minutes.
So do you want to say, you told me this over the weekend, and it just absolutely made my day, but do you want to tell the people now, or once we get into the next question, what you saw that made you say, no, I'm no longer going to be proceeding here?
Well, I don't know if it was the rapping pigeons or Tom conning people of New York by playing piano with like a blind cat, and then Jerry deciding to dance to the music that Tom was playing to also steal money from people. I'm not sure which one it was, but there's a little bit of all of it.
It's a nice Molotov cocktail of film where you say, no. No, thank you. I'm sure going in, though, you were thinking, like, let's see how far into this I get.
This was one of the things that my wife and I always like to do to each other, where neither of us will commit to something. So one of us will put something on purpose just to fuck with the other. It's like the time I took my wife to Red Lobster because she wouldn't tell me what she wanted to eat. So I said, fine, we're going to Red Lobster. And then that actually worked. 5 minutes later, she was like, I don't want this. We're going here. Perfect. She put Tom and Jerry on because we weren't committing to what we wanted to watch. And it worked. We ended up watching something else.
Yeah. The lighting that fire will ignite a decision.
Yes.
I could see you walking out of Red Lobster, and even the employees are like, hey, man, we get it.
Yeah. That's like the Black Dahlia. I walked out of a restaurant without ordering anything. We were sat too.
Didn't even get the Cheddar Bay biscuits. That's how you know.
That was my regret.
All right, the last part of our show, and normally Brian Banner would introduce this sounding like a pterodactyl in heat, but since he's not here, it's called our Do You Even Lift Bruh segment. It's a question and answer segment where we ask a question and leave you guys with it. And this past week, HBO Max did something that I just said we have to talk about at the end of the show. So this Do You Even Lift Bruh is essentially two questions, but if you're not made aware, by the time this is airing, it was probably about a week ago, but HBO Max made a mistake by accidentally releasing the first 2 hours or the first installment of the Snyder Cut Justice League miniseries, which is not supposed to come out till March 31st, I believe, on HBO Max. But instead of being displayed as a menu item to view, it actually played for viewers who were attempting to watch Tom and Jerry. So our Do You Even Lift Bruh is really two questions, Ronnie. Number one, and you sort of answered this, what kind of sick person was watching Tom and Jerry? And two, how the hell does this happen?
Here's my thing. How lucky is HBO that it happened to be Tom and Jerry and not something else that's huge on HBO? Like, what, right. Two people accidentally saw it?
Yeah, I mean, or like stoners who were like, dude, I'm so high that I think this is the Snyder Cut right now.
I did tell my wife that we needed to be super high for Tom and Jerry, so that's very realistic. But I feel like if that had happened to me and my wife on Friday, I would have been so excited. Like, this isn't Tom. If this is Tom and Jerry, wow, they went a lot deeper with this than I anticipated. Like,
well, how's this going to course correct itself?
At what point does Tom and Jerry come in? I didn't know they were part of the cinematic universe at all.
So, Cycly, I have now, since Matt Geiger's not here, I'll sort of play the conspiracy theorist. Do you think this was intentional by HBO to do one of two things? Obviously, now we're talking about the Snyder Cut more than we would be 2 weeks earlier. People who saw the little bit of it, like the 40 minutes they were able to see, might be like, dude, it was fucking awesome. And also, do you think this will get anyone else to actually watch Tom and Jerry on the off chance, like, dude, maybe they'll fuck up again? I don't know. Let me click.
There's never been more clicks on Tom and Jerry than ever before.
But then once they see it's Tom and Jerry, they're like, I'm out.
I think it's not HBO as a collective. I think it's a disgruntled employee or employees who thought this would be really funny. Because I feel like HBO would pick a better movie than Tom and Jerry, you know?
Also, like, I don't know the logistics of setting up a streaming service. Like, my brother would probably know better than I would, but Tom and Jerry has been on the service for like a week, right? Like, why would you be altering where the stream redirects to? It'd be one thing if it was like a new series they meant to launch and they accidentally put the Snyder Cut there. Like, to be editing what that stream redirects to and all of a sudden have it be the show that's not supposed to come out for 2.5 weeks.
The employee I envision doing this is someone who fought so hard against Tom and Jerry being released. Like, was like going to boardroom meetings and like, no, we cannot. He's like, I will walk. I will give my 2 weeks notice.
He's like, if this thing airs, I'm going to make it hell on earth for you.
Yeah. How dare you? This is an insult to everything movies have ever done for America.
Maybe it was a blind person who was really offended by the opening joke.
I don't know, man. The pitching, the wrapping pigeons. I can't believe I made it past that.
I don't know. I can't believe we live in a world where like someone thinks that that's funny.
That we need this as a society. I will say this. If there's anything good that comes out of it, there's no such thing as bad press, as we all know. And there were people who were lucky, whether it was on purpose or not. But I just don't think the Snyder Cut needed more talking to. I think people are pretty excited about it in general.
Yeah,
but, you know, like, you know, that. But we're talking about it even more so. We probably would have even mentioned it on the podcast. So,
can you imagine, like, if I called you and it was probably like 1:30 a.m. when this happened. And I was like, dude, I swear to God, I clicked on Tom and Jerry and it was the Snyder Cut.
I would literally ask you what drugs you're on.
I'd be like, you're drunk. Go to bed. I'd be like,
you're like, yes, but.
I'd be like, are you drunk? Like, well, you know I'm drunk. So, like, why are we even asking that? But I wonder if the next morning the people were even questioning if they actually saw what they saw.
And that's the problem. Like, the market audience isn't the same. Or, I mean, maybe it is, but I really... That's what I'm saying. How many people were like, if it had happened to me, who was watching it ironically, I would have been so excited, right? Like, I would have been freaking out. Like, oh my God, this is the Snyder Cut right now.
Yeah.
How many people who are watching Tom and Jerry, mostly probably kids who parents just put it on the background, walked away and had no idea what just transpired?
Yeah, I wonder. I mean, obviously it's not rated R, but the Snyder Cut is supposed to be dark. Actually, the Snyder Cut might be unrated. I'm not sure. But it's supposed to be darker. I wonder if any parents flipped out.
Yeah, and if so, they flipped out because it wasn't the Snyder Cut. They just got off something that they didn't realize wasn't Tom and Jerry. And they don't realize how lucky they were for 40 minutes.
If a parent called HBO Max, you'd be like, well, you're a bad parent anyway for letting your kid watch this garbage and Tom and Jerry.
Yeah. If anything, you hurt them more than Snyder Cut could ever.
All right, well... Before we let the people go for episode 146, don't forget to vote on these matchups. Again, our Twitter is at Bro4Squad. Guys, it's March. The NCAA tournament's here, and that means it's the Bro4Squad Movie Madness Tournament. And anything can happen in March. Cinderella can make it all the way, except actually not in this tournament because Cinderella is not in this. Cycly, what do you want to leave the people with for episode 146?
Just vote for the worst. Vote for the worst. Don't forget that, because I will make that mistake and absolutely vote for my favorite.
Pretend you're in North Korea and Kim Jong-un is on the ballot. Like, you'd be voting for the worst. So vote for him.
But he's the best, so that's a horrible example.
Oh, God, you've been indoctrinated. Actually, that's smart. He'll probably shut down our podcast.
Yeah, he's a big fan. Come on.
What if he did love us?
He's always tweeting about us.
He's at home like, Broforce Squad, why would you attack me like that?
I've always been there for you.
I said, Kim, I had no idea. Sorry. Rodman and us are his two favorite.
Hey, if those were our two viewers, I would be fine with that.
And it would make sense the rest of North Korea can't listen to us because of censorship, obviously.
Yes, of course. He's just jealous.
We'd be so banned in that country. It's not even funny. All right, again, follow us on Twitter at Bro4Squad to help vote on all the matchups. And honestly, guys, if you comment and it's funny, we'll read it on the show because that's what we do here. Subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. If you type in Bro4Squad as three separate words, you'll find us there. Check out everything we do, and this bracket will be on our website, bro4squad.com. It's also in the description of this episode. Till next time, Ryan and I have to go get our prop bets in, which I always lose anyway.